The following podcast has language and mature subject matter. Parental discretion advised. You're listening to Daddy Issues with your host, Matt Fuller and Race Cooper, a podcast about older gay guys talking about whatever.
Hey, it's Matt Fuller.
Hey, it's Race Cooper, but friends call me Coop.
And welcome to Daddy Issues.
Hey, Matt, do you feel like there's a lull in LGBTQ entertainment right now? Specifically, anything that even represents older queers in any way?
Are you like trying to set up like maybe a Queer as Folk meets Golden Girls? Because I would have to say no. There's really nothing.
All right. You definitely got it there. You're smart as a fucking whip. You know how much we like smart whips. Anyway, our guests have been hard at work over a few years creating a web series called The Disappointments, which is a comedy drama centered around daddies, particularly older gay men in Los Angeles. Please welcome to the Daddy Issues podcast producer, writer, director, actor Rich Burns and actor Trevor LaPaglia. Hi, guys.
Hey, how you
Hi.
Doing?
Hey. Hey, welcome. Welcome Thank to you. Daddy. Thanks for being on our podcast.
Yes, thanks for having us.
I am so excited to hear that there are shows in Hollywood about old people. This is a first. You guys are groundbreakers. How has this happened?
Yeah, exactly. How does it happen?
Can you give a synopsis to our listeners of the web series, The Disappointments?
Sure. So basically, The Disappointments is about a group of friends in their 50s and 60s who, you know, they came into life in their 20s and they were all excited about what their lives were going to be, what their ideal careers would be, the amount of money they would amass, the homes they would own, the vacations they'd go on, the relationships they would be in, like the, you know, the one true love. That's how they felt in their 20s. That's what they were looking at. And now they're in their 50s and early 60s. And none of that has panned out. It has not gone the way that they had hoped it would. And so the show is about how to deal with that. And it's a comedy, it's a dark comedy. So it's not just how to deal with it, but these are characters who deal with it badly and make it worse.
Why do they deal with it badly?
Because they've made bad choices their entire lives, they continue to make bad choices. So like, you know, mistakes or just the way they react to things tend to exasperate the issues and the problems that they face.
So it sounds like it's more of an anti-hero comedy than it is like a happy ending kind of comedy.
Absolutely. These are characters who basically are constantly going from one state of humiliation to another.
Fine.
You know, it's kind of exactly. It's like there's maybe a little sprinkling of the comeback in this, you know, Lisa Kudrow's show that was on for two seasons on HBO.
Oh, so my gosh. Lisa so Kudrow in that show.
I fucking love Lisa Kudrow. She did Death to 2020 recently.
Web therapy.
I feel better about my life when I watch that show.
I think she's the most undervalued friend that there is because she really was the best on that program. Anyway, that's a side tangent. Let's get back to The Disappointments. We usually start, you know, our podcast with a segment on daddy issues. We kind of want to make this show about where we talk about cultural struggles like racism, ableism, or sexism, to name a few. So our topic today is ageism in Hollywood. Rich, why was it important to portray older gay men's lives in the series?
I think, you know, for me, part of it was I don't see myself or my friends really represented in anything. You know, if you look at gay entertainment, and I love gay entertainment, but if you see an older gay, it's kind of like, you know, they're sort of comic relief. They're kind of like, you know, a little bit of a sad sack. They're just constantly searching. You know, they don't have a love. They don't have a boyfriend. They're looking for a boyfriend. They're not fully realized characters that I can relate to going through things that I myself can relate to.
Right.
And so that was a big part of it.
I thought The Birdcage was a totally accurate representation for gay men of what happens as you age.
Yeah, I think there's an absolute truth. honest truth to that stuff. It resonated.
Right, right. But Hank Azaria and Robin Williams aren't exactly like, you know, like quintessential gay guys. So
right. Right. Well, you know, another one showing older gay men is Grace and Frankie. Grace and Frankie, where, you know, you've got these two great actors who when I first saw the show, it made me cringe the way the representation of those two guys. But it evolved to another place where I appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah.
But then again, you also, not to jump the gun on a possible conversation or topics, you've got these two straight men playing right. these parts.
Yeah, we're going to come back to those straight men in yes. a little bit.
Yeah.
So, straight men, we're coming for you.
And also, not to dismiss, they're two very specific characters, you know, and it's hard to have them generalize a whole demographic. So this show really is just three other characters that are themselves and authentic to themselves.
True.
So as you decided that you wanted to portray, you know, older gay men, what kind of research did you do, or how did you go about trying to be as authentic in that portrayal as you could be? Or was there a particular segment of that, of the aging demographic or life that you're trying to capture?
It started with a conversation I had with three other gay men who are my age, and this was about 10 years ago, actually. So it's been sort of gestating for a bit in my head. We were at Merrick's in West Hollywood. We're having margaritas, and we had gotten onto the topic of a friend who had recently committed suicide. He was, at the time, this would have been, you know, in his mid to late 40s. Basically, he was depressed. His career was coming to an end. He didn't know how to transition. He'd worked as an actor and a singer, and it just wasn't happening, and he didn't know what to do next. And that kind of led us into a conversation about the idea of the disappointments we face in life, as well as, like, what can you do? Is like, there were people that we knew who had made big transitions where they saw that their career, their dream career, wasn't going to happen. So they went back to school in their 40s and became accountants or therapists, is a big one that people seem to go to, or real estate agents. So that kind of was the initial spark. And as far as research, like, you know, part of my research is I'm just getting older. So I have the experience. Most of my friends are in the same age range as me. So the conversations we have, we just relate very much to each other about the things that haven't panned out, or the things that have. I mean, I don't want to make life sound like it's one giant disappointment. There's like lots of great stuff, but there are certain areas where we wished things had gone differently.
Yeah, I mean, life's not one giant disappointment. It's more like a series of smaller disappointments. Right.
by the way, just so you know, Rich, Matt is a real estate agent. So, yeah. Oh.
Congratulations, and so not cliche.
Look at me making that transition.
No, that's great.
Way to go.
That happens in the show, actually. So, you might relate to that one part.
Right. The idea for the show came about from this conversation with a group of friends 10 years ago. Trevor, how did you become involved in the disappointments? Like, how did it go from this conversation to Trevor?
They actually had someone else cast for my part in the beginning portion of this chapter.
I hate them already.
I'm just letting it all out of the bag. Yeah. Tom Berkland, who was also a friend of mine. He's an actor, great Broadway actor. He had...
It just wasn't right for this.
Well, it worked out. That's for sure. He had booked a Broadway show, and he ended up taking that project. And Rich was kind of left with having to recast this part. And someone through the grapevine had recommended me to him. And meanwhile, I work part-time at a bar in West Hollywood called Trunks. And it was a quiet Wednesday. This daddy and his buddy walk in. I remember every moment because, I mean, Rich is a stunning man. And yes. He walks in, orders a beer.
You're both stunning.
Yeah. And I'm going to, thank you. I'm going to give you the long version. So he orders a beer from the other bartender. I'm like, okay, whatever. That's cool. The second round, he ends up ordering from me. And, you know, the really friendly guy that I am, I'm trying to spark up conversation. And I'm like, oh, I'm reading his shirt. As any, you know, two-dimensional person would. I was like, oh, what does your shirt say? Wearing a shirt that said the disappointments comedy series or whatever. And I said, oh, are you part of that project? He said, as a matter of fact, I am. I'm the writer of this show. And I said, wow, congratulations. That's incredible. And he's like, yeah, as a matter of fact, he's like, you know, Tom Berkland. And I'm like, Tom Berkland. It's not ringing a bell. You know, I know a lot of people. And he started explaining. He's like, yeah, he was cast in this project of mine. You actually did a scene with him. You were fighting on the beach. I had done this stage combat scene, the stunt scene for my reel. And then it dawned on me that, oh, of course I knew who Tom Berkland is. And then it dawned on me that this guy knows who I am through Tom Berkland, because he just referenced something I did. And I was like, oh. And all of a sudden I'm like, what is going on here? He's like, Tom was cast in this show, but he can't do it anymore. So now I need to recast the part. And then there's like crickets. And I'm looking at him, he's looking at me, and I'm like, are you guys hosting auditions for the part? He said, as a matter of fact, someone recommended you for the part, which is why I'm here. I'm like, whoa, okay, cool.
You're auditioning right now.
You're auditioning right now. I hope you don't blow it.
I was like, let me give you my email and I'd love to read the script. So he sent me the script. A week later, we met for coffee, connected. We talked about everything under the sun, which was really nice. We really connected. And then we met again, maybe a week or two again, to talk about it some more. And it was good. It was nice. We were just talking about it. And I think it was maybe like a week or two after that, I went home to visit my family in Buffalo. And I'm telling my family about this really cool project. And I was like, I don't know if I got cast in or not. I was like, I feel like I have, but he hasn't told me yet. So I ended up like calling Rich. I was like, hey, Rich, did I get the part? He's like, oh, yeah, you got the part. Sorry. I was like, all right, cool. I was like, I just want to know, you know, because I'm telling people I think I got this part. I mean, you're kind of like leaving me hanging here.
All right, Rich, you want to cut in here and explain?
He actually did a really good job telling what happened in the bar. Although I do have to say, like, I was there when I walked in with my friend Mark, and I was like really, really nervous. Well, exactly. Okay. I was like nervous for multiple reasons, and I was trying so hard to not let Trevor see me because I was watching everything he was doing. Like, I wanted to.
Well, don't walk in with a tight cotton shirt on, for one thing.
You forgot what you look like, right, Rich? You forgot that there's no way that you can walk into a bar and people aren't going to look at you, right?
Thank you. I purposely tried to sit someplace that was kind of shady, like in the shadows, incognito, doing what I could.
It's a small bar.
Yeah.
It is a small bar, but I wanted to see how he interacted with people. That was part of it, because the thing about the show is that it's a small group of people who put this together, and I knew like we're going to be like a family, and that the personalities mattered. You know, it wasn't just the talent. It was like, how are we all going to get along? Because I had never done anything like this, and I was going to be leaning on everybody to help me.
Right.
So I wanted to get a feel for Trevor. You know, everything was great. The thing about the way he ended up giving me that second beer was I actually was going back to the bartender. I was purposely avoiding him. I did not want to have any face-to-face time with him because I was like totally in stalker mode. And that
You're
other
not really
bartender
good at the stalker thing. I could teach you something.
I'm really bad. Please.
It's funny you say that because I was like in thirst mode. Where I was like, I'm getting his next drink.
Well, what happened was the other bartender stepped away like almost as soon as I stepped up to the bar, and then Trevor stepped up.
Yeah.
And I had made what I think is like the bonehead mistake of wearing. It was one of the disappointment t-shirts we had when we were doing the fundraising.
Right.
And I mean, it just worked out.
FBI agent on surveillance that wears the FBI jacket across the street in the ice cream truck.
Exactly. Well, and I brought up the series because I brought up the shirt, and it happened to be why he was there.
Right.
It wasn't very well thought out, I guess, but it worked out.
I have an important question here for you, Rich.
Sure.
Does Trevor make a good beverage?
The mean margarita, which is pretty much all I drink. He's a man of many talents. He also gives an incredible, this is off topic a little bit, but he gives an incredible haircut. During this whole pandemic, he has been cutting my hair, and it's
no
better
way.
Than any haircut I get.
Dude, you are like jack of all trades.
Trevor.
What is going on with you?
Can I marry you, Trevor?
I have six clients.
I have a 16-year-old child, and when their hair got long enough and they needed like their first haircut when they were, you know, 4 or 5, I tried to cut it. Never again.
Well, my mom cuts hair. My grandma cuts hair. I cut hair in college for beer money. And now I cut my boyfriend's hair and all my close friends. They like it.
It's just always been a thing, a talent you have? That's awesome.
I mean, I have a lot of talents, so it's like whatever. I'm a kind of a tedious OCD perfectionist.
That sounds perfect for television and film.
Perfect. Oh God.
Yeah.
What? I see that as a person of experience. So for, you know, doing this podcast and before, I worked in my present industry of like working as a fitness instructor or like a owner of a fitness brand. I worked in TV for a long time. So I worked for music, which is like Canada's MTV. So I worked in all capacities and I was kind of like this jack of all trades. So I was like doing Chiron, doing graphics on screen, doing floor directing, doing hosting, doing camera, doing production assistant, doing lighting assistant. And I was rotating through all of those positions all the time. So I kind of like am familiar with all the ups and downs of working in TV land, so to speak. Here's something that I've noticed even from working in Toronto and being in LA is that this, for this medium, or at least for film and television, there's always been a priority given to size, straight white men of a certain age. Why do you think it's taken so long for even the queer community to recognize its lack of diversity in casting film and television productions?
I think in part because people tend to initially, as you know, gay men, queer men were able to produce shows, to create shows, they probably started by doing what they know. And if it, the people who were getting into these positions to be able to do this were these, you know, gay white men, their experiences would pretty much be the gay white man experience. And so casting would probably reflect that as well.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's taken so long for it to expand beyond that, except it's, you know, thing that it finally has.
Do you think that because we're so used to being a kind of like white supremacist or white kind of, or just white centered society that we just, even when it came to queer, we just didn't want to think about the actual stories that maybe kind of started our whole independence or like.
You mean protest? Like exactly like Stonewall,
right. For instance. Or like, yeah. Or the Compton riots. Like those were always black, queer, trans people that started them. So why do you think Hollywood never wanted to, at least when it came to gay productions? I'm not like talking about the mainstream stuff because obviously it's always been centered around size, straight white men. But for the queer productions, why couldn't we look to those stories and try to get it more factually correct?
You know, I would imagine, and I wasn't there during this time in entertainment. I wasn't actually having a hand in it or any kind of control in it. But I would imagine it had to do with probably a conversation saying, okay, what's going to be the most acceptable to the main audience out there, the white audience?
What are people going to relate to? Yeah.
Right.
Well, right. But
what will people pay for? How are we going?
Sorry, I'll wait till my turn.
No.
How do we least offend people with this potentially offensive material? Is probably what they were thinking.
Right. You know, like, how do we get this fully to being realized and supported and sponsored if we don't play nice with the people that have the money?
Right. Well, it's like so many movies now, and I don't want to like point to any of them. And I know how hard it is to make something and what you need to do to go through it, specifically now because of what we've just done.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are these movies where they'll take a true story that has to do whether it's queer or if it's, you know, black or whatever, and oftentimes inject a white person to sort of tell it from that person's point of view, which on one hand, you know, there's something to be said for helping the audience, like having somebody that they can relate to go through this journey so they themselves can relate to what the journey is. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely, I have a bigger imagination than that. And I can relate to, it's not about skin color. It's not about sexuality. It's if something is true and the emotion is true, I'm going to feel it.
Yeah.
So I don't need to be handheld.
So Trevor, to you, why do you think there's been such a lack of diversity in casting for queer productions? I mean, besides Golden Girls, and what?
Oh yeah, they were all black.
Well, hey,
yeah, golden.
I think it's kind of a deeper psychological thing, to be honest. And I'll try to wrap it up in as few words as possible because I could go on for hours about this. But the people in power are the older generation of people who have their own stigma about what it is to be gay. I had my own idea of what it was to be gay when I lived in the closet. And being from a small town, middle America, which is half of this country, you see the divide with our last presidential election of how divided people are with opinions. Those people see gay as the same way I did. When I was in the closet, the only people that were gay were the ones that couldn't hide it. So they were very flamboyant and feminine. I couldn't connect to that, nor was I attracted to that. And that's just where I was in my life at that time. The people that could hide it did hide it because they lived in fear of being a minority and being treated differently. So you have these older generation men and women who have this idea of what it is to be gay. It's that old fashioned stigma. So that's why you see it a lot in the 90s TV, 2000s TV. Only now are we seeing diversity in the LGBT community where trans people can actually play a female. Gay man can play a straight man. For some reason, straight men have always played gay men because, you know, maybe I think a lot of it has to do with ticket sales too. You know, they say, oh, this is a love story. We want all the women around the world to fall in love with the lead character. If he's gay, that's going to ruin the fantasy because they know at the end of the day, they'll never be able to be with him. Even though in actuality, they never will be with him because they're famous living in LA and they live in like Kansas or something.
And also who really wants to sleep with Tom Cruise.
Right. We're finally reaching a time where it takes men like Richard and I, where I've lived on both sides of the fence. Yeah. And I see that difference. And we still live in this puritanistic society where, like, you know, what's going to sell, you know? And if half of America still believes that it's a choice and that it's wrong, they might not support the project. And it's not going to make the money than if it was straight or if it was played by a straight man. So I feel like this is an old idea that's going to die with the generation. And I think our children are being the ones that are really going to change that, or the middle generation like myself, where it's up to me to lead that way. You know, and I think with Disappointments, I have the platform, and this project is an opportunity where I am leading that way.
Trevor, I heard you mention Buffalo, New York is where your family's at now. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, I grew up about an hour north of the city, Niagara County, close to Niagara Falls. Right near the border of Canada there.
You're almost Canadian like me. You were that close to me.
I'm actually eligible to citizenship.
I've gone across to Buffalo many a time when I was a kid because that was my version of the U.S. growing up in Toronto.
I've been to Toronto so many times. I love that city. Got my fake ID on Queen Street there, right near the Eaton Center.
That's where I got my tattoos.
So growing up in, you know, upstate rural New York, how old were you when you came out?
Oh, God. I mean, I'm from a small town. We have a Walmart and a McDonald's. Actually, they knocked our Walmart down to put in a Super Walmart.
You guys are doing good.
We're doing good. Yes. But it took me moving out of LA. I dropped out of pre-med to follow my career as an actor. Moved to LA when I was 20. It took me living in the big city for 3.5 years before I finally felt comfortable telling myself and other people that I was gay. I had been dating a girl in Burbank. That wasn't working out. But it took me living on my own for about 3.5 years to finally realize, like, why am I doing this for other people? Like, no one gives a fuck. Or sorry, no one cares. And okay, good. And I just realized, like, this was the one thing holding me back in my career, because I realized I was pretending to be someone, which at the end of the day was crazy to me. The moment I came out, I was able to just let go and submerge myself in the characters I was playing as an actor. I don't think I would have ever come out if I had never left upstate New York, because, you know, I find this common with a lot of gay men. They need to leave their home so they can experience life on their own, because it's hard to break this steady mold that you've created, this empire of the life that you've built for yourself with your family. You're terrified of letting the people around you down. I find when I go back, I see these closeted men in these straight bars. It's just so transparent to me, and it's so sad. And they'll never come out because they've committed to their life that they will stay in the closet, you know?
I'm going to throw this out there because we keep kind of coming back to this topic a little bit. And Neil Patrick Harris was in the news recently, as recently quoted saying that he thinks there's something sexy about casting a straight actor to play a gay character because of the nervousness they bring to the role. What are your thoughts on straight actors playing gay roles, especially older gay men?
Can you just say the question again in short? Listening to everything.
What are your thoughts on straight actors playing gay roles?
Oh, I don't have an opinion about it. I think an actor is an actor, and then if they have the range to play different characters in different types of characters that have different sexualities, I think that's impressive. I think kind of what we're dealing with now, like bringing more diversity to the workplace, whether it's women or blacks or gay women, we should be more aware and focused on bringing those opportunities to everybody. I mean, who am I to say straight men can't do that when people are saying gay men can't do that? So I think if they're good for the part, they're good for the part. I mean, I can play straight men. I should be praised for that, right?
Yeah.
You just say, too expensive. No.
I mean, yeah, there was a while in my career where I actually had to fire an agent of mine because she sent me on 6 gay auditions in a row. I need you on my side. Like, I consider myself a pretty diverse actor. And yes, I can play gay parts, but I can play straight parts too. She said, well, you're one of the few people on my roster that are comfortable playing the parts. I'm like, well, Jamie, I don't even fit these parts. The only thing I have in common with these characters is that we're gay. Like, you have these straight actors that would do a much better job playing these gay roles because they're like metrosexual and they have like these certain qualities that I don't have. And to answer both those questions, I feel like straight men would have been better to play some of the parts she was sending me out for.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
What are your thoughts, Rich, on this, especially when it comes to older gay men being portrayed by straight actors?
I understand, like, you know, why it used to be 100% acceptable to have straight men playing these roles, because a lot of it had to do with the commercial aspect of the film or the TV show. Like, you know, names, like, you know, Brokeback Mountain, for instance, you had two names playing those parts. You wouldn't necessarily have gotten the butts in the seats if you had two gay actors playing those roles. I think there's a lot of situations where it's, to me, kind of offensive that a straight man has been cast in a role when you so easily could have cast a gay man. James Corden in the movie.
I agree with that.
Show Prom.
Well, James Corden was horrible. Let's
just start. Well, there are so many gay men who could have played that part. People would be watching it anyway. It wasn't about getting people to watch it. People were going to watch it because it was a Broadway show that was turned into a Netflix movie by Ryan Murphy. So they're going to watch it.
Ryan Murphy can pluck anybody into that role and like make them a star. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And there are lots of gay actors in that age range who don't get work.
Right.
Who could have played that? So I think that it's kind of a mix. Ultimately, you know, going back to Grace and Frankie, what would that have been like if they had cast Nathan Lane? And I mean, okay, so Nathan Lane maybe not, because who would believe that Jane Fonda would be married to Nathan Lane, and who would believe that Jane Fonda could not see that Nathan Lane was gay?
Right.
Kind of off of what you're saying, have you guys seen Promising Young Woman with Carey Mulligan?
I've heard of it. I've seen the advertisement.
It might not even be out yet, but my boyfriend works for Universal, so he has this code so we can watch movies that aren't out yet. Really great movie. There's Laverne Cox. She plays, I don't know if you're familiar with Laverne Cox. She's a trans actress.
Yeah. Yeah.
She plays a woman, and she just plays a normal woman in the coffee shop, and I love that. You know, she's not playing this trans character talking about her life as a trans woman. And, you know, for the average viewer, they would have never known that she's trans. And I love that they did that, because they're doing exactly what we're talking about, casting diverse people.
We have an amazing actress in The Disappointments who, unfortunately, in the first season, she only has one scene. But her name is Aris Wanzer.
She's so good.
Effing funny.
Is she a scene stealer? I'll follow her if she's a scene stealer.
Apparently she is.
She's so good, she only got one scene.
She's my favorite person I follow on Instagram. Like, she's the one person I check every day because her content is so funny and so informative. I love her, and I tell her all the time. I'm probably really annoying about it.
Her timing is so good. She's a lovely person, and she's gorgeous.
Fantastic.
And, you know, just cast her. She's a saleswoman in this shop that one of the other characters works on, and they have a little bit of a clash, and she sits him down. She chases him out of the store, actually.
Did she ever come to Jesus with him?
She just has a moment where she's like, she dresses him down. She calls him out of shit, and it's funny. She nailed it. I just sat back going, okay, season two, what can I do with her? She's got to come back.
She knows how to read to filth, so let's have her back. When you get to this point now that you've got this inclusivity, it's more about the period of time that we are in than it is about the roles that are being played. Right. Like what we're doing now within film and television is not the same as 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the acceptance of certain actors, Laverne Cox, Elliot Page now, not Elliot Page, right? Like the acceptance of having that is quite different now in accepting them in different roles than it was back 10 years ago. So maybe that is more part of it when it comes to casting in actors, is because as a nation, we've grown in our acceptance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think also that, you know, we've had these other like Netflix and HBO and these stepping away from the limited scope of what's allowed on a network. And you've got these other streaming services that are just bold in their choices and honest in their choices, and they put this entertainment out there for people to absorb, and it changes. It changes minds. It changes heart. Like people go, oh, okay. Like I didn't know what this was. I was afraid of it.
Right.
And I get it now.
Right.
I think if what I'm hearing you say is we owe more diversity in film and media, not because society has changed, but because of streaming companies breaking up the monopoly on, you know, kind of the big three in content.
Yes.
I don't think there's one single answer, but I think that is an ingredient in the mix that has had a big impact for sure.
All right. So talking about streaming and series, when can we expect to see The Disappointments, and how can we support its continuation of production?
We're editing the last episode now. The picture is locked, which means there's no more picture optical editing. So the episode has gone out to the composers working on the score right now. The colorist is correcting the color, and the sound mixer is fixing the sound. It's a big episode. On average, the episodes are about 10 minutes, but the last episode is sort of a double episode, and a lot happens. But it should be done in the next couple of weeks, and then it's just a matter of we're going to shop it around and see if we can't land it someplace that could support the show and would promote the show. And ultimately my goal is I have a second season in my head, and I want to go straight into production on a second season. It'd be awesome if we could land it someplace where they're willing to pay for that, because crowdsource funding, which is how we supported the first season, it's difficult, you know. Yes. It's a lot. It's a full-time job.
Right.
You know, I cannot thank every single person who contributed enough. There was so much generosity out there to support something that no one had, there was no footage. Nobody even saw it. They were just like, they liked the idea.
Yeah.
It would be great to be able to do that without having to go back to the audience that has been so generous. It's to say, hey, can we do this again?
Right.
If we can't wind up with a streaming service, I will absolutely and happily put it up on YouTube, because I just want people to see it one way or the other. So I don't have an answer specifically yet on when it's going to be seen, but the sooner the better. I mean, I would love to have it out there by the spring.
I have two questions for you, Rich. Yes. We've talked about The Disappointments and kind of how it started as an idea, born into, you know, something more than idea, go cruising through the gay bars to find your cast and crew, got to raise money, crowdsource funding, you're writing it, you're pitching it. Of all of the parts, from, you know, conception to birth to where you're at now, what's been the most fun part and the most challenging part?
I love that question. To me, the most fun and actually satisfying was to be standing in the middle of a chaotic set while people were running around doing their jobs, trying to get ready for the next shot. I made sure every single day that we were in production that I stopped and I just sort of did a 360 and looked at everybody and looked at what they were doing, and, you know, so grateful for all this like really hard work everybody was bringing to it, and just thinking like, wow, this is happening, and this came from an idea. I saw it through. So that always felt good.
That's really cool.
Yeah, just, you know, again, coming from a place of gratitude, and I could go on about all the things I'm grateful for with regards to what people have given and how much blood, sweat, and tears. I have stories about Trevor I could go into with that too, as far as, let me just back up for a second. I'm not an actor, and I was not supposed to be in the web series.
Oh.
There were a couple people that I loved for the part, and either they were busy, or basically they just didn't want to work for free, you know, with deferring their rate, which is how we had to do it in order to get it done for as little money as we did.
Right.
And when it was coming down to it, as you know, my friends were like, Rich, you wrote the part and it's basically you. Just do it.
Stop and being humble about this shit. Just do the fucking part.
Well, and so this is why I was so lucky with Trevor.
Right.
To give him props. Like, because I'm not an actor, he was so generous with his time and rehearsals. And I mean, we really worked a lot to try to develop a chemistry and just something that translates onto the screen. And I think we did a good job. He was great that way and in many ways. Thanks, Trev. Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks, Trevor.
I'm glad you told the good stories and not the bad stories.
We're going to finish our podcast today with a hot daddy alert. And this is where we tell our listeners who we're crushing on lately or give a shout out to a hot daddy we have the utmost respect for. Guys, who are the hot daddies in your life?
I got one.
Okay.
And I'll describe him backwards.
Okay.
He's hot because he has a rescue dog. He rescued a dog from the pound. He's hot because he wears aviator glasses, sunglasses, and he looks amazing in them. He's hot because he drives a 1967 Corvette Stingray. And he's hot because he's our new president.
Aw, Biden. Yeah. Biden is... let's give Jason
you stole mine.
Our... So, Trevor, you don't have a hot daddy because Rich took your hot daddy?
Well, I have like second and thirds. I'm going to be all sappy and say my boyfriends are my hot daddies.
Aww.
Yeah. I'm in a thruple.
Okay, you have two boyfriends.
I do. It's my first thruple, and it's incredible. And you know, they're really no different than any other relationship. Each relationship is different to their own, and this one is just fits me like a glove. I got two people who really care about me, and they both fit different. They both check different boxes, and they check most of the boxes, which is really comforting. Their names are Mikey and Patty. They live about 5 minutes down the street. Yep. Patty won Mr. International Leather of 2015. His name's Patrick Smith. Okay. I mean, if you go to my Instagram, you'll see him all over
we
there.
Can find it. Well, we got it.
Who's your other boyfriend? The other boyfriend.
So wait, he was IML 2015. Is that what you said? The first one.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll find him. And the other one is
Mikey Melanita. He's such a sweetheart, bearded daddy bear. We like to cook together. We make a new cocktail every week on Thursday nights. We've got this like cocktail books, so we have fun like experimenting with a new cocktail every week.
What is the strangest thing you've used as a cocktail ingredient?
A dick.
I wasn't asking you. Okay.
Well, I have 7 years of bartending experience working in West Hollywood. I've had so many different requests. What's the strangest? I don't know. But I got to tell you something that's really gross. I mean, something to not ask for. Tequila and cranberry is not good.
Ugh.
It tastes like Robitussin. People think like, oh, maybe a tequila cranberry. And you wouldn't think anything of it because cranberry is one of the most common mixers. But with tequila, it just tastes gross. So don't try it. Just don't bother.
That's like kitchen sink, kind of like trying to make your cocktail kind of thing.
Yeah, they just don't pair well. They don't taste good.
Look at the public service announcements we're doing. Look at the good we bring.
Right, exactly.
So we got Mikey and Patty. Any other hot daddies you want to toss a shout out to?
I've already hooked up with all the hot daddies that I wanted to hook up with.
You hooked up with Joe Biden already?
Well, I had to sign an NDA for that.
All right, Matt, it's your turn. Who do you got for your hot daddy?
Let's see, well, I've got two.
Okay.
From someplace not America. I can't tell if he's in Hong Kong or Great Britain. On Instagram, Muscle Drew, but take out all the vowels and you got his handle. Because cigars, skiing, and Legos.
Yeah.
Hello.
That sounds like he's Scandinavian. It's into like Legos.
Muscle Bear, Legos, skiing, cigars.
Yeah.
British accent. Sucker.
I know. That's like, that's one of your types.
So
right?
Cliche. It's like, I'm so basic. Like,
yeah. So, you want a leather daddy with cigars and a British accent.
So basic.
That was what I wanted in my 30s.
Dream bigger. I know.
Okay. All right. Who's your other hot daddy?
So my other hot daddy is Scruff Enough. And he was the April 2020 Bare Chest Calendar. And he is muscle and fur. And wait for it, brains.
Yeah, because you like him smart.
I like him super smart. And he is actually interested in helping with our racist Instagram account project.
Yay!
And he's smart enough to actually script as opposed to having to look at the people in the picture and count what color they are.
Yeah,
now,
nice.
If that's not smart and sexy, I don't know what is.
I don't know. Templates and data analysis totally turned me on.
I love analytics. It's like the most romantic part of a date. I'm like, let's sit down and analyze this date. How was it for you? Like, where did you feel the most engaged? I felt like you kind of dropped off about 4 minutes in. Is that where I was losing you? How about you? Do you have any hot guys you want to mention?
Yeah, but not as analytical as you.
Dare to dream.
Dare. So my first one is from Rio. I love the Brazilian men. I can't help myself. I love my Brazilian men.
So, like, have you mentioned a hot daddy that isn't yet from Rio?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I have hot daddies from all over the world. All over the world.
Rio. Back to Rio.
But back to Rio. So this guy's, he's pretty hairless, but he's got salt and pepper hair on his head. and a beard, but no hair, very little hair on his body.
Why are you going on about the hair he has?
Well, because a lot of the guys are like hairy, right? Like a lot of the daddies are hairy and he's not hairy.
Tell me what he got.
He's muscular and he's sweet and he's a nice smile and
Rio.
And he's in Rio. but handsome dude, handles Sabio Lopez. We'll give it in the notes. And then my other one, I actually have been talking to for a while and he's in Chicago, and both him and his husband are actually really beautiful. But the one that I'm going to talk about is Armin Culver, spelled Amon. It's like it's pronounced like salmon, but Amon, Armin Culver. And he's a hairstylist, beauty expert, fitness trainer, crazy beautiful man, talented too. He's been doing things artistically right now as a project to focus on black textured hair. But he's not a black guy. So that's why I'm just kind of like, wow. That's a matter of respect because, you know, hair is a big thing for black people. And when you know how to do our hair, mad respect. So him and his husband, too, Jeff Leckie, they're both really hot guys. I'm clearly wet when I talk about them both. So, you know, hopefully after this pandemic, I'll get to meet them in person.
Hopefully. Trevor, what you got?
Okay, I want to redo with my hot daddy pick. Well, now that you guys are talking about these Instagram guys, it's all coming back to me now. There's this guy in Russia, Konstantin Kamyanin. Oh my God, he is someone I could stare at for days.
I follow him.
And he's
beautiful.
Yeah.
He's beautiful.
And he loves opera. He wants to own his own opera house. And he's creative and shoots on his camera. And he makes fun of himself. And there's nothing sexier than someone who makes fun of himself with a nice beard and big muscles.
But his cum gutters are the one things that get me. Like, his cum gutters are great.
Yeah.
Like, he's got like these.
Everything like, about really, him is like, great.
Somebody's here for the sense of humor. Somebody's here for the cum gutters.
I mean, he's got it all.
Speaking of having it all, we have had this discussion and ongoing debate here on the Daddy Issues podcast, and we actually did an episode about this, but I'll just give you one last pop question here, guys. Is it better to be smart or is it better to be pretty?
Smart.
Yeah. See?
And these are LA people saying this, folks.
Right. Well, and here's the
thing. If you're smart, you can also take what you got and make it as pretty as you can.
Right.
Because like, if you're smart, you can you know how to dress a certain way or to bring a certain style to what you got. But right. At the end of the day, like, you know, what's sexier than laying in bed with somebody and having just a beautiful conversation?
I always go for smart because when you have confidence in yourself, definitely that's going to make you attractive no matter what you look like. And then two, I've always found sexually that the guys that were smart were just more playful and creative in bed than the guys that were not smart.
Absolutely. So
I've always had more fun with smart guys, which tells you, you know, the series of relationships I've had, I've always been like scientist, doctor, scientist,
mad scientist,
married him. My husband looked like Rick Sanchez when he like wakes up in the morning before his coffee.
This isn't sex. It's an IQ test.
Exactly. That's why I try to fuck people up mentally with conversation first, just to see if they can make it. I'm totally with the smart guys, and you are too, because you're a sapiosexual.
It's a true story.
You love them smart.
All right. So any shout outs you want to give to any other hot daddies before we wrap this show up? You guys have been awesome guests.
Oh, thank you. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're funny.
Yeah.
I have no more hot daddies. I'm good. I'm staying with my Joe Biden pick.
Right on. It's a good pick.
It's a classic pick. You can't go wrong with Joe Biden.
No, he's clean in house, and we are proud of you.
Yeah, he is.
In addition to our Joe, we got our Kamala.
Right.
So she should be my honorary hot daddy of the week.
Right. Kamala is definitely a hot.
All right, folks. Well, that's our show. So thanks for listening. I want to especially thank our guests, Rich Burns and Trevor LaPaglia, for joining us today. And Coop, we all know that you are a tease. So what are you going to tease us about?
I will tease you in a second. But again, thank you, Rich Burns and Trevor. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We hope you had a great time.
Yeah, it was absolutely. Great. Thank you.
Part where you say yes.
Yes. So you guys are a delight.
Our format is fun. We like to poke fun at a lot. Okay, before we go, have I got a tease for you? Okay, so a short time ago, I posted my frustration of hot guy thirst accounts on Instagram for wanting me to be featured on their stories and on their ethnic accounts, but never wanting to feature me on their actual account. And so I posted this in my stories, like my frustration of this. I'm like, this is real segregation again in 2021. And it seemed to strike a nerve with my followers. So we thought, hey, why don't we make this into a podcast? So we're doing our research, as my cohort said before, with some analysis and some friends that are helping us out, because there's very little information available on which Instagram accounts are the most white supremacist. So just in time for Black History Month, you won't want to miss this upcoming podcast that we have, in which we dig into Instagram accounts, thirst accounts, and whether they're racist or not. Until next time, thanks for listening to Daddy Issues.
Do you remember Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People?
Yeah.
Why didn't we take that approach?
I don't know. Because that would be easier.
But let's just piss everyone on Instagram off. It's going to be awesome, folks.
Oh, my God.
Join us for it.
Oh, 2021 is totally about zero fucks. Let's do it. All right. Thanks, guys, for joining us today. And thanks for listening to Daddy Issues.
Thanks for listening to Daddy Issues. Podcast transcript and notes available at gaydaddyissues.com.